The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
The program allows for a business that has, in effect, capped out on all prudent projects given current technology. And let me give you a good case in point. Batteries.
Right.
Batteries are not yet financially viable. We saw how solar panels came down dramatically. Right. Batteries haven't yet done that.
We're talking batteries like in phones and things like that? Or
no, this is like the
D batteries, C batteries?
No, this is like the Tesla Powerwall where you've got, let's say you have
solar. I've seen that on people's houses, right.
You have solar panels on your house, but what happens during the night? At night, you have to use the power company.
Well, as a matter of fact, the solar goes back to the power company, right? Your house can't just take it in. People think, like, you put on a solar panel, you plug things in, it's just catch on fire. You can't do that. It's got to be converted. So because I've seen it before. That's what that Tesla panel does.
Yeah.
Converts it to use for the house.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It takes that power from the solar panels, holds it until a later time, evening.
Right.
And then the house continues to run. It's a phenomenal program.
And you don't need to use the power plant.
But the power wall isn't yet cost effective. People are buying them. People that are innovators, they're
early Tesla adopters, right? They pay $80,000 for their car. Now it's $20,000, $30,000, whatever.
Right. Yeah. But for the average business that is going to make a decision based on a good financial play, that wouldn't be something you do. So,
the information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
I'm David Goodman. I'm the CEO of Eden Arc Group. We have actually three companies within Eden Arc Group. We've got Eden Arc Group, which does sustainability certification. We have Pace Advisor, which is a licensed insured general contractor and finance company that sort of functions as the boots on the ground for Eden Arc Group. And then we have a company called Best You Can Be, which is an employee enhancement program for performance, health, and safety.
All right, David. So thanks for coming on the show. And I don't know a lot about sustainability, but I'm definitely interested in it and saving the planet for my children and all the stuff that I read that I think, if you pick a topic that ignorance is bliss, for the individual, there's a lot you don't want to know. But for the health of the planet, you kind of have to know it. But before we get into all that stuff, I'm jumping ahead. Maybe we can go back with, because you have a long history of different companies that you've worked with. You've worked in different, for large corporations, and you kind of moved along to what you're doing here. So maybe we can go start at the beginning.
Oh gosh, at the beginning.
Now, not like when you were born in a log cabin, but we
exactly.
can go back to, yeah, earlier
and
in
I
your
walk
career.
5 miles each day.
Right.
Started my career in advertising and marketing, and spent a good amount of time working for doing advertising campaigns for large organizations like Heinz, Kraft, Keebler, Pillsbury, Green Giant, Kimberly.
Real marketing.
The big guys. And then I developed health and beauty aids, fragrances, colognes, aftershaves. If you know the Adidas line of footwear, which uh-huh. the rest of the world calls Adidas,
right? Yeah.
I'm the guy that did the fragrance. It doesn't smell like dirty socks.
No, I hope not.
The Adidas line of fragrance right. and toiletries.
Yeah, because Adidas is like either their family name or one of the brothers, and the other
the
one became
family.
Puma.
That's right. Yeah,
I've listened to a podcast about that. It was like Puma versus
yeah.
Adidas, and I learned the whole thing about the brothers, and it's an interesting story. But anyway,
Okay. So then I was recruited into, at the time, a small boutique investment bank / real estate company.
Okay.
And we grew to become the largest real estate company in the world. I was the 32nd partner. I ended up managing a portfolio of about 40 million square feet.
So it was mostly commercial office space?
Commercial, yeah.
Okay.
Commercial, office, industrial, warehouse.
No residential apartment building.
I had some apartment complexes as part of a portfolio from a pension fund. But but for the most part, commercial real estate. And that's what gave me the beginning of my exposure to energy efficiency.
Where okay.
these big buildings
right.
with pass-through expenses, you know, the cost of
sure.
maintaining the building. And so it got me involved in energy efficiency. And
right, because it's costly to run these buildings and these tenants.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
Sure.
So then I was recruited away from there and spent basically from then until now doing corporate enhancement work. I'm a turnaround guy. I'm the guy that you are
okay,
a
sure.
private equity group or a venture.
Right. Private equity says we bought this company. It's a mess. We want you to turn it around, sell it or run it or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm the guy they parachute in.
Got it.
And I did a number of projects that are properties and businesses that were all in the, call it the green industry. Manufacturers of solar panels, distributors, installers. I spent a lot of time in the green space and in ancillary businesses, manufacturing businesses that were around the green space. And
now, how did you get into, I mean, you had your background in real estate, right? And you really only kind of got into the efficiency space out of necessity, right? Because you had these buildings. So why were you the guy where they said, oh, David, you can go run this and it's used as a solar panel company. You're like, how the hell am I going to do that? Like you just figured it out or you, I mean,
no. So when I left the real estate company, I was actually recruited away by a client that wanted to do an IPO and I was part of that effort. And when we finished that up and I finished my tour there,
right.
Then I was hired into another organization that was moving along in that industry, which is basically the advertising industry again.
Okay.
Then I actually found a small distressed window and door manufacturing company, and I put together a deal and I bought that company myself.
Oh, okay.
And
like
so
replacement windows, efficient wind, things like that, and doors?
Exactly. And in Florida, which is where this company was, impact windows are the big thing because we have hurricanes.
Right.
And an impact window in Florida, it has a metal frame. Up north, of course, it's a plastic frame or right. sometimes wood, but down here it's a metal frame. And the glass is like a sandwich, two pieces of glass with goo in between. And
it's
a
shatterproof, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, the glass shatters, but the goo,
doesn't
the
come
glue,
apart.
holds it together. Right. Yeah. So one day I was in my plant and I was looking at the finished product. And I was thinking, you know, that looks the same metal and glass, two pieces of glass with glue in between. It looks the same as like a solar panel, metal framing, glass interior. And I thought, I wonder if there would be a way to find transparent solar cells and put them inside a window and skin a high-rise building. And come to find out,
so you can still see out the window, but now the window's collecting energy from
exactly. And the only thing you see if you get close enough to the window is the little wires that connect, because the answer is there are transparent cells. Okay. The downside is that they are not that efficient. They don't catch as much of the sun's light.
Don't collect as much energy.
So I started looking at that industry around 2006, 2007.
Okay.
And then I ended up selling that company and actually being hired.
The window company,
right. And ended up being hired, believe it or not, by a solar distributor and installer as the CEO.
So you already knew a lot about it because you'd done a lot of research and sure. Okay, makes sense. Okay, that's a good question.
So around 2008 was when I became involved in the production side of this industry.
Okay.
And that obviously over the years, I've run a number of companies in the space, hired by different groups.
Okay.
And what I saw was it took me back to my real estate experience and the certifications that are in existence for real estate buildings, which are building centric. And I saw the need to create a business centric, not a building centric, not a box centric, but the business in the box, a business centric certification program for small to mid-sized business, because all the programs that were out there at the time were either for the box or if they were for the business, they were monsters, very big, very expensive.
Just big companies. Yeah. So buildings, what's that, like LEED certification, those types of programs?
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
Right.
So a program like LEED, which when it was built, it was phenomenal, but here we are 20 years later and it doesn't pencil. It's a very expensive program.
It
is only useful by the box, not by the tenants in the box. And it's not a people program. Sustainability is about you and me. It's about people.
Right.
And
if we're dead and gone, we don't really need a building, right?
And LEED is a building centric energy reduction system. So anyway, started looking at the different options around the planet, and the far, far and away, the best sustainability program that's out there is the ISO 14001. If you look at the GRESB study, the GRESB is a European auditing group, and they study 79,000 building and businesses around the world, the biggest of the big.
Okay.
And of that inventory, 56% of all those organizations and buildings and businesses use the ISO 14001 standard, 56%.
Okay.
No other program in the world is even double figures. So, I mean, it is by a magnitude, it's in over 170 countries. It is the sustainability certification for the world.
And I think you said it's promulgated by a group out of Switzerland or Sweden, somewhere.
Yeah, ISO is a Swiss nonprofit. They make standards. They've made 20,000 different standards, of which the 14001 is one. And I approached them and said, I love your program, but you got to admit that it's only being used by the big guys. Would you let us try to scale it out for small to mid-sized business?
And right now, define, because you had told me before we spoke, small to mid-sized businesses is a very large category of businesses, right? I mean, you said it was like something like under $1 billion of revenue. You're considered a small business.
So the parameter that I was given is from 0 to 1 billion B.
Yeah, which we don't think of people. You think of small businesses. You think like mom and pop shops, small companies. Maybe they're doing 100 million revenue, not a billion. But right. Okay.
And actually, it even gets better. So let's use McDonald's as an example.
Okay, right.
McDonald's is obviously over $1 billion.
Right, but not each of the franchisees separately, right?
But its individual locations are.
Yeah, they're individually owned.
So we could march across the world, and except for the headquarter offices of the really, really big organizations, we could certify, 99.9% of all businesses around the world. We cannot certify a home-based business.
Okay.
But other than that, we can certify nonprofits. We can certify churches.
Now you can, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you've adopted these standards.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because of the program. Okay. And so what we did was we took this monstrous program and we scaled it out so that the cost, the time, the cost of doing one of these certifications, all these certifications, is the time of people. And, right. and putting everything together. And we scaled the program out so where there's only 6 forms that we have to fill out. And so we dramatically reduced the time commitment of the advisor, of the client, of the auditor. Any legitimate certification in any industry
right.
has to have a third party auditing source to verify that you did the things that you said you'd do.
Right, right. Of course. If not, you just fill out your own application.
Sure, we put that soul on the roof. Yeah, sure we did.
Exactly, sure. You want to get your Eagle Scout, your dad's the scout leader, and he says, exactly. You did all that stuff. Yeah, you can't do that. But I would think that with a lot of small corporations, if it's that time intensive, their loss, the cost of their time outweighs getting certified under the old system, right?
Let me give you two responses to that. First of all, you're absolutely right. Before, the program was incredibly expensive and incredibly time consuming.
Right.
Now, it's very inexpensive and only a very small amount of time for staff. I mean, right. We're talking a few hours.
Right.
I mean, just
now.
Yes. Yeah.
Now so it's doable, it's, right?
Yeah. So, but to your question, the biggest question or pushback that we get from prospective clients is just that point. And right. that is, I love your program. It sounds fantastic. We really want to do it. But you know what? We're busy over here. And, I don't want my staff to get away from the day job.
Right.
So once we convince them that this is not going to be a dilution of their staff's time,
right,
then everything else falls in place.
Okay. So, I'll let you keep going. You want to explain?
Sorry?
Well, I want to understand. So if you are a business, right, obviously businesses are motivated by profit
mm-hmm.
and cost reduction and things like that. So does this what does the certification do? Yeah, what does it take?
What does it do for you?
Jump in the gun?
No. So first off,
right.
I need to say it in this fashion. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, that doesn't always motivate people.
And we should be able to stop right there.
Yeah.
And that should be it. But of course, we can't stop right there. The next point, right under it's the right thing to do, is it gives that organization a platform. It gives that organization a voice, and it basically allows that organization to then be a champion and a spokesperson for sustainability and play it forward. Okay, so those two are sort of together.
That's a public relations, it's an advantage. It's a marketing advantage, sure. Okay.
But it's also key, because what we want, what we need, is for that organization to buy into their responsibility, because I'm getting ready to get into the numbers. And what we don't want is for somebody to get all glassy-eyed because of the financial benefit, but then not commit to the real objective, which is becoming sustainable for the right reasons. Okay.
Okay.
So it is the right thing to do. Now let's get to the numbers.
Okay.
88% of all consumers want their companies that provide them products and services to be certified sustainable.
Not surprising.
So, you know, 9 out of 10 of the people that are shopping and buying your stuff want you to be a certified sustainable company.
Right.
What that does, it creates a $1 to $2 trillion, that's a T, opportunity for businesses to take market share away from their peer group if they become sustainable.
Right. I'm sure there's a scale as to how much, what's the cost of, if a consumer is looking at purchasing a product and the sustainable product is $30 and the regular product is $15, it's got to be a point at which they start thinking twice, like, am I saving the planet 300 years from now or am I saving $10 now? You know what I mean? From your average consumer.
Well, so the answer to that question is 10 to 15%.
That's the difference. So if it's more than 10 to 15%, they don't go for the sustainable one? Boy, I'm hoping it was a bigger margin than that.
Yeah. Well,
doesn't take
I'm sure that for some consumers and for some products, of course, but right. On average, what data tells us is that 10 to 15% is the threshold that the average consumer spends for a product or service that is from a company that they have verified as being sustainable.
So now, basically you're saying if it's a $20 product and the non-sustainable product and not certified product is $18, that's enough. They might just say, ah, screw it. I'll save the $2. That's disappointing. I got to say, that's a little disappointing.
All I can tell you is that based on the data that we see, it's a 10 to 15% uptick. Now, if
not surprising, I guess, but yeah.
Well, but here's where that goes, that's really irrelevant.
Okay.
Because with the program that we have, there is not going to be an uptick in cost, and therefore there should not be an uptick in price.
Okay.
The company is going to enjoy lower costs, and the opportunity to promote itself as a certified sustainable company and differentiate from its peer group will drive sales 15 to 30% on average increase. And if the company wishes on top of that to put a little bit more of a margin, they can feel comfortable putting a little bit more, but we don't even recommend that. We just say, look, you're going to cover your costs with energy savings, and your sales and revenue are going to go up because you're a good corporate citizen and you're going to promote that. What we know, and let's talk about the virus for a second.
Okay.
Prior to the virus, certified sustainable companies were growing 5.6 times faster than their non-certified peer group. That's 560%.
Right. I wanted to clear that up. That's not 5.5%. That's 500%.
That's 500%.
Yeah, right.
Since the virus, the group that did the study, New York University,
Stern School of Business.
Graduate school. They did a new study. It's now up to 7.1 times.
So 700%. And that's not surprising. You'd think it would go up, right?
So you'd think it'd go up, but at the same time, what we're seeing is that when a company becomes certified sustainable via a legitimate program, via a program that the world recognizes being valid, and waves that flag and says, look at us, you know, we're a good corporate citizen, we know that 9 out of 10 consumers will move their business. Now, if you gouge your prices, then no. But if you keep your prices in line, then your sales will go up. Your costs are going to go down because of the things we're going to do for you. And now everything's going to have a good return on investment. So the benefit to you from a sales, revenue, profitability, valuation standpoint is just off the charts. MIT did a study that just went out here recently where the return for investors of certified sustainable companies versus their non-certified peers was a plus 67%. So if you are an investor in a company and you would like to see a better return, you might want to whisper in the management's ear, you know, you might want to check out becoming a certified sustainable company because your sales are probably going to go up and your costs are going to go down.
Yeah. Okay. So before we get into, because I want to understand what the certification means and what it means to a business. How does it, you know, what is the business doing now that it wasn't doing before, to, you know, in this sustainability thing? Because that's, you know, that's my concern. The whole broader image of discussion of, you know, the environment, our water systems, all that type of stuff. But I'd like to know for you, like, how did that happen? You were an entrepreneur, right? Your marketing, business, and so forth. Where did it come from where you became interested in sustainability and a concern? Because obviously you must have a concern for the planet. You must have a concern for the environment. It's not just all driven by cost and, you know, benefit and things like that. So I was just curious personally how it kind of came about where you said, you know what, this is a passion of mine and I'm going to pursue it and make it into a business and whatever. How did that come about?
So we have another company, it's called Pace Advisor, and we've done over 1,000 construction projects. And all of those projects are in the green space.
This is outside of the real estate company you were with before?
This is a separate company that we have. We own Eden Art Group, we own Pace Advisor, and we own a third company.
Right.
And because of Pace Advisor— and
they're all green projects?
All of them, 100%.
Okay, then why is that? Because you had a passion for doing it the right way, in your opinion? Or
Because we became involved early on in a national financing program called Property Assessed Clean Energy. And the Property Assessed Clean Energy financing is only usable on green projects.
There you go. Okay.
So we got involved. And that's just where we put our business. We haven't done all of our projects with Pace financing, but all of our projects have been green projects.
I mean, like, we're, so that we're kind of planted the seed.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
It was a good, it made financial sense to do it. And then you got more and more and more involved in the industry.
Right. So with my solar experience, as I mentioned, I've run some solar companies. I've done over $1 billion worth of solar around the world.
Okay.
And with this general contracting company that's done over 1,000 green projects, I've run the math. I've seen the return on investment for clients when you do green projects. So I have the benefit of having modeled these projects out and seen the benefits.
Right. So it's not just about being bohemian and loving the planet. It's about real dollars and cents.
It is totally about real dollars and cents. When we go to a client, back to your question of, well, what do these companies do?
Right.
So the answer is, it depends on where they started from.
Okay.
We don't have a bar that says for you to become certified, you have to get to this level.
Okay.
All our program requires is that you make progressive improvement. So wherever you start from,
okay,
as long as we start moving in a positive direction, then the program rewards that with the certification and will continue to reward that. Okay. So if a company, like right now, we're finishing up a white roof for one of our clients who's becoming certified.
Okay.
They are in an office space and they needed a roof anyway. So we're putting a white reflective roof.
Your construction company is doing that.
We're doing that roof for them. So the client, depending on what their needs are, we go in and we do an audit and we look at where they are. And in some cases, there's a whole bunch of things that we can do that make financial sense. And in other cases, there's very little that we can do that make financial sense. But as long as we're moving them in the right direction, and the client's going to say yes or no on each project based on the return on investment, and if we don't put a good project in front of them, they're not going to accept it. So in every case, the client's going to make the decision based on dollars and cents.
But do they lose their certification at that particular point if they say, well, it doesn't make sense, we're not going to do that?
No. So the program allows for a business that has, in effect, capped out on all prudent projects given current technology. And let me give you a good case in point. Batteries.
Right.
Batteries are not yet financially viable. We saw how solar panels came down dramatically.
Right.
Batteries haven't yet done that.
We're talking batteries like in phones and things like that, or
like
D batteries, C batteries.
No, this is like the Tesla Powerwall, where you've got. Let's say you have.
I've seen that on people's houses, right? Right.
You have solar panels on your house, but what happens during the night? At night, you have to use the power company.
Well, as a matter of fact, the solar goes back to the power company, right? Your house can't just take it in. People think like you put on a solar panel, you plug things in, it's just catch on fire. You can't do that. It's got to be converted. Because I've seen it before. That's what that Tesla panel does.
Yeah.
Converts it to use for the house.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It takes that power from the solar panels, holds it until a later time, evening.
Right.
And then the house continues to run. It's a phenomenal program.
And you don't need to use the power plant.
But the power wall isn't yet cost effective. People are buying them. People that are innovators, they're
early Tesla adopters, right? They pay $80,000 for their car. Now it's $20,000, $30,000, whatever.
Right. Yeah. But for the average business that is going to make a decision based on a good financial play, that wouldn't be something you do. So, if we reach a point with that client where we've done everything that we can think of that makes good financial sense, then in effect, we can give them a mulligan for a year or so while we try to figure out new things.
And they come back every year, they got to recertify or resubmit their paperwork or whatever.
So we look every year and we try to find new things. And many of the things, now remember, and this is where sustainability is much, much broader than energy reduction.
Okay.
Sustainability includes water.
Right.
Waste.
Yeah.
It includes people.
Yeah.
And people, that's everything from performance through safety, through health, community, logistics, vendors. So we can help that client do sustainability projects that aren't energy saving projects.
Right.
It's not going to cost them anything.
Right.
We're going to continue to move the needle from a sustainability standpoint.
Right. Because sustainability really has to do with not using your capital resources like their income resources, right? I read a book years and years ago. It's called Small is Beautiful. And it was about what the planet would be like if we treated our capital resources, not treated our capital resources, because they deplete. So, right? So if it's sustainable, then you don't have those depletions. So yeah, I understand it's not energy. Sure.
And let's talk about people for a second.
Okay.
Every organization in the United States loses $7,000 to $12,000 every year per each full-time employee to the big five: insomnia, stress, anxiety, physical pain, and mental acuity. Add those five up, let's round it to the middle and say every full-time employee that your company has, you're losing $10,000 in GDP. And if you're in the other developed countries of the world, they have the same metric, not in dollars, but under their monetary currency, the same amount. Okay. So if you take that employee who's currently sleeping 6 hours a night, and you're able to help him sleep 7 hours a night, you increase his productivity 2.5%.
Okay.
And so our program works on that alongside the energy savings that we're doing on the box and the business.
Yeah, because good health and wellness of your employees improves sustainability. It makes sense.
And, right? Oh, by the way, it makes you more money too.
Of course, right. It improves their productivity and everything. That's one of the problems, is there's a lot of large corporations that don't act like people matter. And at the end of the day, if the people didn't come back one day, you wouldn't have a company. So,
well, and the reason that the people piece is so critical to our program is that, again, as I mentioned, I've done a lot of energy efficiency projects. And the cost of people, the money that's lost on the people side, is so dramatic that if you don't include that in your program, you know, that's the elephant in the room.
Right, right. That's the big problem. It's interesting. I mean, it's not interesting. I see companies that are doing the right thing now to support the health and wellness of their employees. And I see some that are like, no, you have to come back to work. I'm like, well, half your group is frightened. They're going to have panic attacks in your office, and you're going to spend more money, if you care, on mental health and wellness, you know, therapy and training for these people, than instead of making it, because they can work at home. People are more productive at home, I think, these days. You work longer, right? You end up getting home 4 o'clock. Somebody, you know, emails you, hey, can we talk about it? You jump on a Zoom at 6:30. Next thing you know, it's 10 o'clock. You're still on the phone. You're exhausted. So, you know, maybe there's going to be a point at which people learn how to teach their employees to balance things if they're working at home and not overwork themselves. Because like you said, it's a depletion process. It's not, I mean, you and I aren't 22 and we're like, we're going to build this company. We program for 4 days straight, right? And we don't sleep or eat. We were kids, you know, it was different. But that's not really what a good entrepreneur does. He doesn't like run himself ragged until he drops. That's not productive, you know?
Well, and ultimately that entrepreneur, if he's successful, he's going to have to hire people.
Right. Of course.
And you got to keep them, you got to keep them happy. You got to keep them healthy. You got to keep them to where they're performing. And if you burn them out.
Right. Now what can, cause I'd watched, there was a Netflix, series. They're doing a lot of documentary stuff on the planet. And who is the host? Is a famous kid, Zac Efron. He went around the planet with this friend of his, who's really, he's the sustainability guy. And they went to Reykjavik and what's going on in Iceland there. And they went and they studied water. Like, they've got this water sommelier, like out in LA, I think he's the only guy who does it. And they taste different waters. And they talked about, I forget there's a reading of water, like, I forget what the term is. You probably know what it is. It's parts per million of certain things. And if it's like, you know, I think regular water is like 100 and like good spring water is like 400. And these things are like 18,000 parts. I forget what the term is. There's this water that comes. Anyway, so they went, they studied the water system in France. Apparently their public water system is very, they take it pretty seriously. And you can even get carbonated water from a fountain. Like they don't sell, you don't take water from a fountain. They sell bottles that are empty. You fill it up and stuff like that. I thought it's interesting that we take that for granted. I mean, our water systems are terrible. But can a company, what can they do on the water side? Is there anything that they can do?
Well, there are multiple answers to that. First is the simple use or reduced use of your existing water program. I mean, most businesses, most homes have leakage.
Right. Like, you're talking low flow things, valves that work, faucets that don't leak.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So you've got toilets that flush too heavily.
Right.
The old ones. You've got leaks in your system. You've got flow problems. So right off the bat, there is a quantity question that can be addressed. And then you've got the quality question with filters and such. So there's two sides to this. And then there's the porting of the water. And are you going to have a whole bunch of these plastic bottles that you talked about, or are you going to use something else to carry your water with?
Right.
So clearly water can be broken down into a bunch of different categories, and all of them are important, and all of them have opportunity to improve.
I want to figure out what that reading is called.
Yeah, there's so many different ways to evaluate water. I'm not sure which one they're.
There's a video of the guy, what's his name? Michael Masha, and his, I forget, it's like TADs or something, or TDS. That's what it is. Have you heard of TDS?
T-E-X.
TDS. Ted, yeah. David, Sam. TDS. And there was this Slovenian water or something. It was like 7,400 TDS, and like Fiji water, which apparently is not so bad when it comes to, you know, the waters that are out there, is like 400. I don't know, something like that. And you know, it's got certain kind of minerals in the water, and apparently distilled water is like, you shouldn't even drink it. It's like the water's just sucking things out of your body because it wants the minerals back. And it was interesting, but I think we just, especially as Americans, you know, I think we're becoming more conscious of the planet and sustainability, but up until, I don't know, 10 years ago, I mean, you grew up just taking all the stuff for granted that we have supermarkets that have the kind of food in them, and diners, or I remember I had friends from Italy visiting, and this was only 15, 20 years ago. They don't even know what a diner, like something's open 24 hours. You can order anything you want anytime. I mean, it's like, it's absurd and it's unheard of. And we have every vegetable and every this, and it's all fresh. I'm not sure how fresh it is, but you know, it's sprayed with something, I don't know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's causing all these problems where we're dependent on meat and, you know, and all these animals that are causing other problems, and we probably shouldn't be eating meat anyway for as a species, right? I eat it, but we try and eat less of it, more plant-based.
So that takes us to, have you heard of Meatless Monday?
No, but I know about the Impossible Burger. I've read a whole thing on that.
So if you're in the United States and you have a regular office building, if you're not in the agriculture or shipping, or a few other industries, if you're just running a little office, your carbon footprint is 10 metric tons per employee.
Okay. What can you give me like an analogy what that equates to? What's 10 metric tons? Is it
of carbon?
Yeah, but what does it equate to? Is it a 747? Is it the Hoover Dam? I mean, how much?
Yeah, a metric ton is how you measure carbon credit.
That's per year.
That's per year. Okay. And that if
like a lot, I don't know.
And if an employee were to just not eat meat on Mondays.
So one-fifth of the week, 20% less. Okay.
They reduce one of those 10. So that company, that's currently, let's say they have 10 employees, so they're generating 100 metric tons of carbon. That's in average what they're producing. And if all 10 of those employees would just agree that they won't eat meat on Monday, you knock out 10% of their carbon footprint.
So, well, I have two questions for you, but the first question is, so you're reducing your meat intake by, I guess, 20%, right? Because there's 5 days in a week, but it only reduces your output by 10%?
Well, remember, you're talking about one single event and having that much of effect that it makes up for all of the infrastructure that company has to keep you cool and hot and comfortable during the day. So your lack of going to McDonald's at lunch has a dramatic impact because of the entire chain of events that have to provide that food to McDonald's for you to go and pick up.
I got it. Okay. So if you, yeah, but you gotta go somewhere to eat, right? So you're still going out and eating. I mean,
if you were to go to McDonald's still and just eat a salad.
Or go to Chipotle and get the sofritos, which is not beef. It's fake. Right. Yeah. But so how does that reduce your carbon footprint? Does carbon come out of my butthole and that's why I'm making less of it, or no?
No, because of the chain necessary to produce that meat and everything that goes into the production of
it's
that
a supply
meat.
Production chain thing. So it doesn't work if everyone did it once, because it wouldn't change the production chain. This is
correct.
Something that has to be done on an ongoing basis by companies all over the country. And then the meat industry says, oh shit, we got too much meat and we're making too many cows. I understand. Okay. That makes sense. See, I don't want to leave that because if I don't understand it, then what's right. Okay. Makes sense. Right. And that's kind of what's happening with the whole pandemic, right? People, well, actually no, our meat consumption, I guess, didn't go down because we're all home. But the problem is that the people weren't going to the meat plants. So now they couldn't work and they couldn't cut the meat, make the meat. And there's a whole supply chain breaks down, but I guess that's worse because now you get the cows out there making methane or whatever they do on the right. The whole thing is just a mess. I mean, we really missed that whole thing back in the caveman days as to what we should be eating as human beings, you know, paleo, I guess makes sense.
So, you know, that's getting back to one of the earlier questions of, well, what do these companies do and what can they do? That's
change their cafeterias, right?
That's something that a company, its employees can agree to do, doesn't cost the company any money at all.
Right.
It's a fun program that everybody can contribute to, participate in, and it makes a difference. So here's something that a company is not writing a check for.
Right.
And is part of a sustainability program. So just because a company signs up to become a certified sustainable business doesn't mean that company is going to be writing a bunch of big checks. The program is set up to where everything they do is going to make positive financial sense.
Well, they also, if they have on...
Either they're not going to write a check or the check they're going to write...
They're going to give some sort of incentive to their employees, right? Exactly. You know, we'll give you a gift card to go to McDonald's if you show us that you ordered a salad instead of a burger, right? Or can you get the Impossible Burger? Would that count if you went to Burger King? So, but they also could make changes to their cafeteria, right? So if a company has on-site facilities for their employees, right? If they stop providing, you know, stop purchasing meat options or purchase 20% less or whatever, right? That works its way down the chain. I think that's what I'm getting out of this. And I think that that's a good thing, that if people can start to realize their actions are not about, I mean, yeah, you're about reducing your carbon footprint, right? So you're like, listen, I want to be zero carbon footprint. But the reason that that's working is because of the ripple effect it has down the chain, right? As a matter of fact, that's why we're having a problem, because of the ripple effect of the whole planet consuming things and doing bad stuff. Right? And hairspray wasn't a problem when one person was using a can. It was a problem when everybody in the country was using it.
And this gets us back to one of the foundational components of our program, and that is that change is hard.
Yeah.
Change is hard for all of us.
Yeah. And we're used to doing things certain ways. We drive the same way. We like the burgers. We want to eat it. You know, that's why the whole Impossible Burger guy, he's like, nobody's going to eat this if it doesn't taste like meat.
So if you set the bar too high and you make it either unattainable,
right,
or you make it so that it's not fun,
right, just
people will give up.
That's why what happened before you made the program more available, right? It was just a burden. Yeah. Nobody wanted to do it.
So the purpose of this program is to take smaller steps and get people feeling good about those steps and smiling and being happy and saying, wow, you know what? That wasn't so hard.
Right. Let's change habits a little bit at a time, right?
And take another step.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to crush them at first and make them say, well, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
We want them to say, wow, that was fun. I'm glad we did this. Let's do more.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I saw that episode about what's going on in Iceland, they're very, not health, they're very environmentally conscious over there. It seems that it's just part of their society.
Yeah.
Like nobody walks around and says, oh God, we got to do this again. Just, it never occurs to them. That's what they do. And I think we got to kind of reverse, change people's habits and, you know, like the whole carbon credit thing. I think for the average person, he's not going to buy carbon credits to make his mortgage, you know, but if it becomes such a common thing, maybe more people will do it, you know? So, I think the whole thing's fascinating. And I'm glad to have met you, because it means you're saving the planet. At least there's somebody out there doing it. As I learn more things, you become, like you said, you become more conscious of, you pick up a bottle of water and you're like, you don't just drink it. You're like, huh, what's in this thing? You know, where does it come from and why is it here? And should I be drinking out of a plastic bottle? Maybe I should have a reusable thing. And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if we use bags going to the grocery store yet in my family, but I'm sure we will at some point. They'll start charging you for the plastic bags, then you got to bring the other ones. But you got to change behavior one piece at a time. So if somebody wants to learn about how to become certified, we'll put some links in the show notes so they can read about it. And
if a person goes to our website, EdenArk.com, EdenArk.com.
Okay.
And there's a button that says start a conversation. If you just click that button, there are some questions. And if you answer those questions, that gives us the information we need so that we can come back and give you answers. And then you can make a good decision.
Okay. So if you're a business owner out there and you got a, you know, not even that big of an operation and you want to be more conscious, they should go to your website. Now, Eden Ark, is that, where does that come from?
Garden of Eden and Noah's Ark.
That's what I was going to guess. That's a good one. Okay. I like that. All right. So David, I appreciate you coming on.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.